fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. He's talking about what you're talking about, only in a much more eloquent manner. You're listening to Primetime Sports with Bob McGowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
So I don't usually like to talk about what we were trying to do and didn't get accomplished. But I thought we should mention what we were trying to do tonight.
Okay.
So we were going to have either Jason Kidd or Jay-Z on the program today. But what's happened is, because of Masai Ujiri's F Brooklyn,
the thing you loved and I didn't like,
they apparently had a meeting after they got back to Brooklyn and have decided to lay low as a result of that, as if there's nothing they can say that would make them look good. So neither Jay-Z nor...
no point fueling the fire, is that what you're saying?
I guess that's what they think. Like, in my mind, I wasn't even really going to... You know, I didn't think that was that big a deal. It's done. I wasn't going to bring that up necessarily. It wasn't going to be... Certainly wasn't going to be the focal point of attention. I mean, I'm sure you ask one question about it. But anyway, they've cocooned. So, it's
that's
not that I...
interesting, because that's... You know, you think with the... Both of those guys are... You know, one is very media savvy, and the other one, as a former veteran basketball player, was in the end able to put a sentence together and never embarrass himself. You know, that's a fascinating thing that they would bow out.
Well, I'm not.
I would suggest that maybe they're a little more nervous about this series than people realize.
I don't know what it means. I mean, and I want to be careful here and not say throw either Jay-Z or. Mm-hmm. Kid under the bus, because I don't know that it was their individual decision. What I'm told is they had an organizational meeting.
Wait, Mr. Prokhorov said don't do it?
Who knows? Who knows who's making
Let's
those?
Let's ask Mr. Prokhorov if he'll come on.
Does he speak English?
Oh, yes.
Does he?
Yes, okay. He's very, very...
okay, good. I didn't know. I don't remember seeing him.
Yeah. For
anywho.
You can buy Rosetta Stone for $9 billion.
Well, you think that's how he learned English?
No, he... No, I know how he learned English.
How did he learn English then?
Well, I would suggest that in his previous life that being able to speak English was very advantageous.
What was his previous life, John?
I would suggest that he probably had a job within the Russian government or the Soviet government, similar to a few other people.
Do tell.
Similar to the president of Russia.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's who we're not having on today.
Good. So...
Well, I'm slightly disappointed, but I was optimistic. We thought we had it all done.
I used to when I ran a hockey program, I used to get mad at our announcers and our producers for always putting up a list early on of who the players aren't playing.
You thought they should only put up a list of who is playing.
Well, that's who you should look forward to watching. So you've broken one of the cardinal rules of Shannon TV.
No, that's of no consequence to me whatsoever.
I'm well aware of that, Bob.
But as I said off the very top, I don't know that I've ever done that before. Like, begun a show by saying, this is who we're not having on. And here's why we're not having them on. But I thought it was interesting.
I still remember, I think I was at university here in Toronto.
Is this a story about you listening to me while you're in university?
No, but I got home
good.
Late one night.
Because that would be a lie.
Not by much. And And our great friend Fergie Oliver was doing CFTO late sports.
Of course he was.
And he stood up and he said, "Well, folks, it's starting to happen. The Leafs almost made a trade, but it didn't happen." Here are the scores. And you're going, "Well, what?
What
are you doing, Ferg?" No names, no teams. They almost made a trade, but it didn't happen.
Well, Ferg may have been at a function earlier in the evening.
You think?
He every once in a while would go to a function earlier in the evening. I, in fact, have been with him and Marsden at functions earlier in the evening when one or both of them had to wander off to do the late sports.
Well, I've actually been in a few of those.
In no condition to do the late sports, I might add.
11:10 at night, I worked in the newsroom at a radio station in this town. And about 11:10, the phone would ring every time Pat was doing the late sports at CFTO. And, "Hey, kid, give me the scores." And you'd give him the scores. You'd watch up. 20 minutes later, he had the scores. And he looked like a genius. And life went on.
Mm-hmm.
He was a brilliant broadcaster. As you know, one of the guys I idolized and worked with for many years was Dan Kelly, the great play-by-play man of the St. Louis Blues. And Dan always told me that the best broadcaster skills, ability to dance on the air, the ability to ad-lib, was Pat Marsden. And I would tell him he was full of it because it was Pat Marsden. He says, "I'm telling you, this guy had everything to be a great broadcaster." And I said, "But Dan, he says, "Oh, he was much better than I was." And yet it was Dan Kelly telling me this.
Yeah. I don't know if Pat had the desire.
Well, that was the problem, right?
Pat wanted to have fun.
Too much fun.
And did.
Yes, he did.
And between him and Ferg.
Oh.
Well, I have some stories, but I don't think I should tell them. Although there's one I could tell because it's just a generic story.
Come
well, on. It's 19. Oh, God. The winter baseball meetings are in Toronto at the Sheraton.
Well, then they were
downtown.
In the winter.
Yeah, it was December.
Okay.
And I can't remember, 78, be around there.
Okay. You were working in this town?
And I'm working here.
And I was going to school?
And I'm in the lobby of the Sheraton Hotel, and I'm doing the show, doing Talking of Sports.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on 10 to midnight. And we had a desk, a table, set up in the lobby of the hotel. Now, back then, the baseball winter meetings, things actually happened. Mm-hmm. Trades actually happened. Guys would do deals in the lobby of the hotel. All the general managers were there. Most of the team managers were there, the presidents of the clubs, a handful of players, a bunch of media. And they would, you'd see them get two general managers go into a corner and start talking, or they'd wander into the restaurant or the bar just off the lobby of the Sheraton. And you go, okay, something's going to happen. And it did.
Mm-hmm.
Trades were made.
Sure.
Bunches of them. Today, not so much. So we're doing this show, and I've got Hollywood people had come in for it, Hollywood actors. I got them on doing the show. I had a microphone set up at the front so people who were wandering by, we could literally go, "Hey, grab a mic and join us." And, you know, Bavese, I couldn't shut him up. Tommy Lasorda was on every night.
Right.
Tommy had to stop by and say something. And I think Sparky Anderson was there. It was all this list. So show's on 10 o'clock. So one night about 8, I'm wandering around the lobby, and there's Marsden and Oliver. "Come on, we're going to have a drink." And there's a bar right in the lobby of the Sheraton.
Still exists.
Yeah. So we go in there, and you know me, I'm more or less a teetotaler, and I don't know what, I had a Coke or something. And they're pounding it away. And then, so about 9:30, 9:45 comes, I said, "Guys, I got to go on do a show." And Marsden says, "Hell, I got to do a show." And I looked at my watch, I said, "Patrick, you got to be, you're on at 11:30. And you got to get up to agent court to do the show." "Don't worry about it. I'll be fine." And so Ferg was just as bad. I mean, Ferg was three sheets to the wind too.
Yeah.
And so I get up from the table, and Ferg gets up to say goodbye, and I says, has he got somebody to drive him up there? He says, oh, he drive himself. I said, Jesus.
Well, that couldn't happen today.
So I can't attest to what he said, but there's a television monitor within eyesight. They had a lounge thing set up. There's a television monitor within eyesight of where I was, and I guess the his segment was on like at 11:45 or 10:12 or something.
Well, I mean, Lloyd went to, in those days, Lloyd went to 11:20, and then World Beat News, the Night Beat News, went with Tom Gibney, our pal Tom Gibney. So Pat was probably on at 11:45.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I look over, and there's Marsden looking just fresh as a fiddle.
Fantastic. Oh, yes.
And I assume he just breezed right through it.
Yeah.
And an hour before, he was functionally illiterate.
Yeah. He was, and as I said, my friend Dan Kelly, Ray, said that Marsden, both countries, Canada, the United States, the most raw talent as a great broadcaster was Pat Marsden.
Well, he had a skill. I can attest to that. Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated will join us a little later. John Angelos, the executive vice president of the Baltimore Orioles, will join us in studio.
Wow, that's good.
He's coming in. Tim Bontemps or Bontemps? Bontemps.
It's from New York.
Of the New York Post. If you're coming in, Cooper, you got a duck. Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada and Bob Elliott of the Toronto Sun will all be with us. Blue Jays 6-1 lead last night.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm looking at the standings going, okay, you could probably be tied with New York if the Yankees lose, blah, blah, blah. It's all good. Nice little run, chance to sweep the Orioles. Kaboom. What a disaster. You didn't watch a minute of it, did you? You watched
No, I didn't. No, at 5-1, I was back and forth at 5-1. You know, we're in the viewing room, you know.
I'm starting to get worried about McGowan.
Well, no. Here's the thing, Bob. McGowan's starting to get worried about McGowan.
Well,
I mean, after what he said, his arm's fine, but he's feeling a little tired, you know, fatigued.
Well, he shouldn't get fatigued after 65 or 70 pitches, which is about where he is when the whole thing started to blow up.
The thing that I find fascinating about this whole situation and carrying the extra pitcher as opposed to the extra guy for the bench is that... John Gibbons was on radio today and was post game last night, talked about it very frank. You know, we got a problem. You know, we need this. In any other sport, if the coach or the manager, the coach in this situation of a hockey team said, you know, we got the wrong allotment of players. You know, we got too many forwards. We don't have enough guys on defense. The world of that league would go ballistic that this guy's turning on his manager.
Right.
But that's the nature of baseball.
Yeah.
Baseball, you're allowed to have this. John Tortorella basically said we don't have the right chemistry with players, and if David Booth's our best player, we've got a problem, and everybody's trying to kick him out of town in Vancouver.
Well, especially Gillis, who didn't like
was trying, that. Yeah, right. And yet, it happens in baseball, and I would suggest that Alex probably agrees with him, so it's trying to find that chemistry. That's the one of the fascinations of the difference between baseball world and the other professional sports.
Brian Cooper has wandered in here. Pull up, cozy up to the microphone.
Good observation, John.
Hello, thank you, Brian.
Robert.
Hello, Coop. Before we get to you, we still have a moment or two. What the hell's happening with the Columbus Blue Jackets?
Well, they're winning.
They're winning.
What do you mean? Here's the thing,
that was
Bob.
A good game.
They've all been good.
If you have watched the Blue Jackets play throughout the season,
which I have not.
Correct. Most have not. And I would say that what the Blue Jackets are doing in hockey is comparable to what the rest of the NBA is watching with the Raptors. Mm-hmm. People didn't give the Raptors any respect because they never watched them, never saw them on network television in the United States. Yeah. So when they play well, they go, wow, this is new. The Blue Jackets have probably been, along with the Calgary Flames, the two hardest working teams. They don't take a shift off. They have, believe it or not, they have a lot of depth, they have a lot of speed, and they have, when he's hot, a very good goaltender. And so all of a sudden, even a 3-goal lead that Pittsburgh had last night is not insurmountable.
Yeah. Was the Nash deal pivotal?
Totally. Totally. And Scott Housen, who's now in Edmonton with Kevin Lowe and Craig McTavish, deserves a lot of credit for being ballsy enough to make that deal, you know, and getting Rick Nash, who had requested the trade earlier in the year, out of town. And in the end, the people he got for him, particularly Anisimov and Brandon Dubinsky, Dubinsky's been the best forward in the series, better than Sidney Crosby. You have to think that Scott Housen set forward what this franchise was supposed to be. And what's that, 4 years ago now, 3 years ago? It is a great storyline.
Well, and quietly playing well, unlike the Raptors, though, didn't win their division, but worked themselves into the playoffs and has shown that they belong there.
Well, can't argue that. San Jose can sweep the Kings with a win tonight. Wow.
That was quick.
Yeah, that was quick. Although I would, basically what happened.
Did you make a goaltending change if you were the Kings?
Not a chance. Because if you look at the goals that
we have no choice, really.
That Quick let in.
Who's the number two goaltender now?
A guy named Martin Jones, who's a former Calgary hitman. He actually won his first 7 or 8 games in the National Hockey League. Very good goaltender, 6'5".
Yeah. Well, why not make a change?
Because Jonathan Quick is one of the elite goaltenders in the National Hockey League.
Not this week he isn't.
And, I know, but you'll blow any confidence you have.
And you want him to play next year.
For next season, right. It's exactly right.
Who cares? I got to win now. Screw next season.
I don't think they have to win now.
That is just, that is conventional thinking.
You're investing? Well, it's a major investment. He's going to be your goaltender next year.
So what?
You don't embarrass him. He's having a tough
now.
I will tell you right now, he is not alone.
And the guys in front of him suck.
Well, I get that, but you know what?
The guys in front of him suck.
Well, hold on. The guys in front of him, and he sucked for the first 2 games. They were not bad. They lost in overtime the last game.
At home.
And really what happened was that, and give Doug Wilson credit in San Jose for retooling a hockey club over the last 18 months, saying, we
got to
be physical. Anaheim's physical. LA's physical. We're playing in the same division. And you know what? We're going to have to beat the heck out of them to do it.
Truculence.
That's hockey talk. That's what I hate about hockey talk.
No.
You guys don't want to, everything is, this is how you do it. And so it has to be
done.
Any sport is like that though, Bob.
Not according to Bob.
If in basketball,
according to Bob.
Jonathan Quick wouldn't have played game 3 if I was the general manager.
And Bob McCowan wouldn't have been the general manager by Saturday. So that's okay.
Well, we'll see whether I would have or wouldn't.
Have you ever had an off day here?
Oh, no.
I never get days off.
No.
Work. It's all I do.
Yeah.
But I'd be happy to become the part-time coach of the LA Kings.
Well, you've been every other team.
I'd be happy to do that. Like, I could do it. Like, I wouldn't move there.
No. You'd do by phone.
I'd be like J.P. Ricciardi. I'd do it from here.
Yeah. Half in, half out.
Came to town like 3 times in the year. That was it. No, it's just no question in my mind. You got to get rid of that stiff quick.
You didn't even know who the backup goalie was.
I mean, what are you talking about? I don't care who he is. He's got to be better than this stiff.
Here, we're going to find out if and when the series ends tonight or when it ends. How hurt Drew Doughty has been, because he hasn't been himself. He got hurt, the bad shoulder injury in game 78 of the season. And so much revolves around what Doughty does. Mike Richards has not played very well. So all of a sudden, when you take your number 2 centerman and your number 1 defenseman, and then all this stuff goes on, we're going to hear things that this
and
team
that
wasn't
team goes
100%.
Based on how Doughty goes as well.
I think so.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So by the way, so did Canada.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So let me ask you two idiots a question. So if the World Series started tomorrow, you want a mirror? If the World Series started tomorrow and the Toronto Blue Jays were in it, who's who's your starting pitcher in game 1?
Mark Burley.
Yeah. R.A. Dickey.
But wait, R.A. Dickey's the number 1.
No, I don't care, Bob. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Mark Burley.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Because R.A. Dickey, so far.
Yeah.
Well, same thing with Jonathan Quick. Doesn't matter who's number 1.
No, because
who's...
Oh, you were making a point. But baseball's totally different.
They have a starting rotation.
There's no starting rotation in goalies in hockey.
We're talking about...
If the Blue Jays had one
wasn't
that to
tricky?
Win.
That was so tricky.
I knew exactly where he was going. I mean...
You did not?
I did so. God.
It was bad enough.
I worked with a guy on Saturday nights.
No, there's no analogous.
It's perfectly good.
I used to work with a guy on Saturday nights. It was pretty predictable, too. And you have to go along with the act to make it work, you know?
There you go. That was.
You don't have to go along with it to make it work.
That was you and Johnny Carson, right?
It worked for 40 years before you showed up, Shannon.
Oh, here we go.
When you were
in a truck in Edmonton.
That's right.
It was safer in the truck.
How about high school?
Might have been.
Yes.
The Jacobs family is engaged in deep discussions about the future of the Buffalo Bills. Although apparently they will not comment on whether they will make an offer for the team.
Well, we've all seen...
What are the complications here, Brian? Because ownership requirements in the National Football League, got to be one owner.
Jacobs Jr., Jeremy Jacobs Jr. versus Jeremy Jacobs Sr.
Charlie would.
And so, first of all, I mean, this makes a lot of sense. One, when you're dealing with the NFL, you don't talk to anybody. If you're really doing a deal, you're not out there in the media talking about we're going to be going after.
Correct.
It. So, two, they're residents in the marketplace.
They do live in Buffalo.
Three, they own a major national sports team for years. They know how it operates. They know the capital appreciation of a franchise value. They see what they have there in the king of all sports in the U.S., NFL football. I think it's a logical move for them. I think they will head a group. They'll put a syndication together, and they're going to have to take majority. But I the fact that he's not talking, the fact that they have so much experience in this, they already have the food concession rights in the stadium itself.
You know, there is a lot to be said for it. And the other thing, there are a lot of dots connected with the family. With law firms in New York that work alongside the NHL and the National Football League.
It's not even the law firms, John. It's the personal relationships. Yeah. I mean, they all go to these various award shows and different outings and championship games. And so I guarantee of the 32 teams that they've got friends in 20 of them.
Yeah, and let's face it, the Jacobs family versus Donald Trump, I don't think there's much comparison. Am I right?
Right. And so if you're...
Well, the sentiment is that the Donald, dating back to USFL days and the lawsuit...
Which he won, by the way.
Right.
Yeah,
$3. $3 million.
No. $3.
It was $3.
$3.
Oh, $3.
All right.
Well, he won $1 and it was trebled.
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder if he still has those $3.
There's the check exists. So in the doc, it's a 30 on 30. The check, I saw the check.
It's still around?
I think he has it. I think it exists.
You'd have to think he'd frame it. Anyway, there are 15 owners still left from that fiasco who have not, and probably none of them have forgiven Donald Trump. So the consensus is that Trump would not be approved by the board.
Well, you know, and we talked about this before. One, he wouldn't be approved by the board. Two, they don't like a guy that's on Thursday nights at 9 o'clock telling people you're fired, whose ego's bigger than the world. They, you know, they're quiet, understated owners that run other empires, and then run their NFL business quietly.
For the most part.
Yeah. I don't think he's fits the mold, if you will.
No. Yeah, I was just thinking...
Well, it's a bit of a club.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't have my computer with me. Is it the Kroenke family, who own the Avalanche...
Denver
and,
Nuggets.
And the Nuggets.
Right.
Don't they own the St. Louis Rams? Or did they were they not allowed to, were they not allowed to buy the
I don't
Rams?
Think so. Okay. I don't believe they
or
do.
Or did he sell the Rams already? I thought the Kroenkes were involved with the Rams. There was a big
I think
big
they
issue.
Had a minority shareholder.
Okay.
And
they bought them out?
Yeah.
Okay.
I could be wrong on that. But I don't think they do any longer.
But they were involved with the Rams.
Yes, they were.
After
it's just the
Mr. Rosenblum.
The principal owner has to own a no less than 30%, has to be an individual, and can't own a majority of any other franchise in any other sport.
Right.
So, but in the Denver case, I believe you could own a minority piece.
Well, and that's what I think it was. It was a minority piece.
Right.
The Jacobs,
yes.
You know, the more we hear about that, the more it makes sense. The more they deny it, the more I believe it's going through.
Gary Bettman stated what everybody else believed and has believed for, God, a year. That he's estimating that the salary cap will increase by about $6 million to close to $70 million, which is exactly what everybody thought it would be. almost to the penny.
Everybody thought it was going to be a little higher, Bob. It would be
than
higher.
70? I heard 70 over and over.
No, it was going to be closer to 72, but the Canadian dollars, it's hurt it.
In light of the success that they had with the outdoor games and the league revenues up on every front,
yeah.
And wait till, you know, more television dollars kick in the future.
Wait, that's more television dollars?
Yeah.
Really?
But can you know, the average man on the street is getting a 2 to 3% salary increase a year. 10% is not bad. And
no.
So I think, you know, the work that the league and the deal that the players got has worked in favor of both.
Gary also said, and this is when asked about the possibility of an expansion franchise for Quebec City, he said, quote, we get lots of expressions of interest, whether it's from Quebec City, Seattle, Las Vegas, or Kansas City, and we're listening, but we haven't enacted a formal process to begin considering expansion. That's not something we're intent on doing right now, but we are listening,
mm-hmm.
unquote.
Yeah.
That hasn't changed.
And it hasn't, but internally I can tell you that they would have taken their research department and done an analysis of those markets with what they would have viewed their estimation of corporate dollars in the markets, TV revenues in those markets. So there would be, long before the expansion committee gets established, they would have a distribution of paper to everybody involved saying, by the way, here's the upside for us if we go to Quebec City. Here's the upside for us if we go to Seattle.
And I think what they will be doing more than they've ever done in the past is the due diligence on the financial wherewithal of the prospective owners.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd hope.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
And I don't, as a result of the some of the groups that have failed in the past, I don't think you'll see those underfinanced types of groups coming forward that much more in the future.
Here's an interesting story. The Seattle Seahawks will host the Green Bay Packers Thursday, September 4th in the NFL season opening game broadcast by NBC.
Mm-hmm.
But of the team's four nationally televised contests in prime time, the Packers game is the only one they'll play at home. And the reason given by the National Football League is the recent history of Seattle blowing out opponents when they play in Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sort of makes some sense to me. If you're a television executive, you want a signature team, but you want as competitive a game as you want. But I've never heard of this reason.
I don't. But you know what? Look, I think these guys, they go by market size.
Sure.
Of the home market. So, you know, you have a built-in base level of audience. They go by the entertainment factor of competitive teams. They go by the star factor of the players, the opposing team players. I mean, there's a lot that goes into deciding the schedule. And it's not just, let's put a bunch of numbers in a ball and pick it out, and you've got this and you've got that. That's not the way it is. There's a lot of thought put into the scheduling of these games.
No, I just find it interesting that that they would. I don't remember ever seeing. I'm not saying that it hasn't happened. Given the excuse,
right.
This is why we'll have them on. But you got to play on the road.
Well,
that the games are closer.
No, well, the other thing I would, let's face it. I think one of the downsides of playing a game in Seattle, particularly on a weeknight or a Sunday, is time. You know, there.
That means no West Coast team would be on air. What do you say? Why are you saying
time zone, non Sundays.
No, but we're talking Sunday night games,
right?
No, but I believe the NBC is that a Sunday night or is that Thursday?
That's a Sunday night game.
This one's a Thursday night game.
So that's what I'm.
That's
saying.
That's the CBS deal that they just signed.
Yeah, I'm just saying that the national games. I mean. The other thing is they still have to start keep looking after CBS and their national package on Sunday afternoon.
Yes,
but those exclusive nights, the ESPN night now on Monday, and the NBC game on Sunday night. There'd be some current concerns on Monday night playing at 5 o'clock Pacific time.
Yes, without a doubt.
Right?
Without a doubt.
So that national night out.
I agree.
We can do the Sunday night. We're going to do it once.
You can do it Thursday night.
And I'll tell you what. Remember, the NBC schedule goes into flex at a certain point, and
they're saving their marbles up.
They're saving their flex for the Seahawks if they're hot again.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. That is a good point. Surprisingly.
George Hoffman was on with us yesterday from Chicago, and we talked. Yesterday was the 100th anniversary of Wrigley.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to do renovations, extensive renovations, $300 million.
Oh, I know.
$300 to $600 million renovations there. And the one of the principal issues is the rooftop gang.
Mm-hmm.
The people who have buildings outside the or over the left field fence, principally.
Left and right.
Yeah.
They're both there.
And they sell seating on the rooftops to see
do.
Cubs games.
Yeah.
And there's a deal with those rooftop owners.
Right.
The Cubs get 17% of the revenue they generate.
Right.
And they have a 20-year contract, which they definitely should not have signed, but they did. And so the rooftop owners are saying, hang on a second, if you renovate the stadium, part of the plans is to build this big-ass electronic scoreboard in left field. They're going to keep the manual thing in center field.
Mm-hmm.
But a big-ass TV monitor or whatever in left, which would screw a bunch of the rooftop people. And Bud Selig has now come out and supported, not surprisingly, the Ricketts family and the Cubs, saying that
what is
this
supposed
is crazy.
To say no?
Well,
this
but you know what? Look, I support the Ricketts in this case. I mean, you find they have a deal in place. They're going to have to find a solution to that, either a buyout on a prorated basis for the next few years or whatever it is. But you know, they can't be competitive to the other clubs if they're not maximizing the revenue that they can bring in. And, you know, when you look at what they have there, the product is they own the stadium, they took all the risk. They own the club, they take all the risk. And the ongoing operation, they take all the risk. In a broadcast deal, they would sell the rights to someone else to watch what they own.
Okay.
And in this case, these people are watching what they own. And there's no risk associated with it.
Well, but they did a contract.
But it's stopping them from moving forward to maximize their products, profits. They're not on an equal footing with other clubs. I mean, they need an articulating big scoreboard that is going to be doing advertisements and crowd enhancements and everything else that every other club has, and that increases the revenue. And, you know, maybe they made a mistake and short-sighted when they first did it because of the romantic feel of the old-time baseball. It wasn't this owner. You're right.
No.
But look, they bought the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have to find a way to buy them out of the contract and then allow yourself to be competitive.
There is a simple way to solve the problem, is put the video board where the manual scoreboard is.
Well, they don't want to get rid of that.
Yeah, but that, again, that's the charm, right?
Come on.
I know, it's a tip of the hat to baseball of the past.
No, I like the charm.
I
mean, Fenway was renovated, but they didn't get rid of
the
monster.
Charm,
they
old.
Put seats on top of the monster, which a lot of people don't like, me included. But nonetheless, the green monster's still there. It is, and the manual scoreboard.
You can
in
still
the green
have charm
monster.
And character in new stadiums. Yankee Stadium, new Yankee Stadium's fantastic. You can still have that feel and that charm. And maybe, you know, get rid of the old scoreboard is the answer.
And you know what? Video-wise, with the CG now, with character generation now, I can make the video board look like a manual scoreboard.
Right.
You know? What are we talking about?
Right.
This is silly. This is silly.
Well, no, I don't think it's silly.
I do.
I'd rather they didn't have a video scoreboard.
Listen,
at all.
I didn't want them to have lights either. I loved going to afternoon
games.
You
know what? Baseball as a sport is stuck in tradition sometimes.
Sure.
Too much so. And
I think that's what makes that's.
Think that's what makes it? Well, there's a new generation that doesn't.
Here's the thing.
Screw them.
That's exactly right.
Any renovation at Wrigley anything at Wrigley has to do one thing. It has to shorten the line to the men's room. It is the worst stadium
the whole experience.
In baseball.
Right. Yeah, that's charming, isn't
the worst,
it, Bob? Standing in line?
I still remember doing...
standing in line at the trough.
Oh, I still remember doing the outdoor hockey game at Wrigley.
Oh, yeah.
We were there for a long time. I felt like we were there forever. We were there about 9 days. And my goodness gracious.
Well, look, we understand it needs work.
Come on.
Well, and then the concessions.
Let me ask
the whole
something.
Thing is like a cave.
Why, if you're going to put
it's
a scoreboard
like a cave.
Out there.
And yet I love going.
So. I know, but for the tradition and for the experience. But because there's no other place that has that feel.
Create an area in left field, around, on top of the scoreboard, whatever, and allow the existing apartment owners or whatever to just move the people from there to there.
How about this? Stop the madness of that. You know what? Buy them out. Have it done. Because in a few years, they're going to want to put boxes back up there.
Well, have you seen them?
I'm talking about the club wants to put boxes. I don't know if the club should put boxes. We have to go. All wrong. I know. Hopefully, you're going to come into the next century soon.
Sure. But listen.
Century is that. I don't plan to be here for the next one.
He's starting Wayne Rutledge in goal for the
Kings.
I'm surprised I'm here for this one. He's starting Wayne Rutledge in goal for the Kings tonight.
I didn't say that at all.
Well, you didn't even know who it was. I could have said Wayne Rutledge. You would have said,
John, I didn't know who it was.
Rogie Vachon.
Well, there you go. You know what? He might be okay. He's 63, but he might be okay.
Be better than Quick. I can tell you that for sure.
He's 63. He's going to be 70.
That's Civ.
Junior B goalie, Rogie.
Yeah, well. Quick could get cut by a junior B team. Oh. Thank you, Brian.
Good to see you, Bob.
Do you have to stay for another segment?
I'm going to, Bob.
Damn. It's prime time on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Before the Armacown, Shannon, it's prime time. Butch Carter will be in here at the top of the hour. John Angelos, the executive vice president of the Baltimore Orioles, is going to visit us in studio. Tim Bontemps of the New York Post. Glenn Healy from Hockey Night in Canada. Bob Elliott of the Toronto Sun, all coming up on the program. Here's our friend Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. Hello, Richard.
That's a very jam-packed lineup you have there. I like it.
Always. Just not enough time to squeeze everybody in.
Richard had my favorite tweet of the year last night.
Do tell. Which was?
I'd like to know that myself.
Well, about your love of Stanley Cup playoff overtime games.
Yeah, I mean, that's a repeated thought by me. But and some people, you know, this is the thing with Twitter, as you know, is you say anything, you know. Abe Lincoln was a great president. No, he's not. You're a jerk. Right, you weren't alive.
Bob just had four of those during the commercial break.
Yep.
Right. So, but it really, to me, is hard to argue that there is a better overtime in any sport than Stanley Cup postseason overtime. Some of the Olympic overtime, if you want to get a little sort of, you know, into the specialty area. But, I mean, think of every major sport or even minor sports that we all watch. They're literally, I think it's a very hard argument to make on drama, quality of play, everything else, that the NHL postseason playoff action when it gets to overtime is just, it's so spectacular, so interesting. You don't necessarily even have to be a fan of one particular team. It's just, it really is great theater, and I can't think of anything in sport in terms of overtime that's better than that.
Well, the best part about overtime is they get rid of the shootouts in the playoffs. That's the best part.
Hey, listen, there are people talking about going and getting rid of this because it might take too long. It might go six overtimes. Maybe we should go to a shootout.
Idiots are talking about that?
They are idiots. And I mean, you watch, it'll happen. We'll get a four overtime game and people are going to say, well, we should have had a shootout.
Well, but those are stupid people and we've got to stop listening to them.
Okay.
I was just going to say, it was great to watch the shootout in Sochi with TJ Oshie. I'd much rather see teams deciding on the ice as opposed to the shootout specialty.
We talked about this a bit earlier, and I'm interested in your take on it. The NFL's decision to give only one primetime game to the home game, at least, to the Supersonics.
Seahawks.
Supersonics, my God. Seahawks. And I guess the question I would have to you is one I asked and was unanswered in the last segment, and that was, is there an historical reference point for this? Has this been done before? Looking at a team and saying, well, they're too good at home. We don't want to put them in a blowout situation.
To be blunt, I have no idea on what the historical reference would be or if that's been done before. The one thing I would recommend, though, because I think it would give you a little bit of insight, or at least your listeners, is Peter King had a big story today in his the MMQB website where he embedded with the four men and the 40 computers who put this NFL schedule together. And I believe in his story. I read it very early this morning. But I believe in this piece, which is up now. It's really, really good. They talk about why the different contingencies for Seattle and I think why the schedule is what it is. I know that King was writing about there was a runner-up schedule, that, you know, the schedule that would have been used if not for this one, where Seattle had a three-game road trip, just like a crazy three-game road trip all across the country. I think King said would have been 11,000 miles in 15 days. So there's something, I think, and this is just me paraphrasing, with all the contingencies that the schedule has regarding Seattle, there's a reason I think why they kind of got a weird schedule this year. So I think if I remember, King's piece elaborated on that a little bit, but historically I couldn't even tell you the answer to that. It just would seem to me that sometimes there's a team that gets a fluky one every 10-year schedule, and maybe Seattle got it this time.
Moving on. Major League Baseball is investigating ESPN for allegedly misusing the dugout camera they had in the Yankee dugout after last night's game. This was an ESPN game. Was the Yankees and Red Sox last night. And Michael Pineda, of course, was ejected for putting pine tar on his neck after the, I think, second inning or whenever it was. And, I mean, is there an issue here? Are we going to see cameras taken out of the dugout? This was a camera, I guess, that was a remote camera that had the ability to not only look into the dugout but also look down the tunnel. And that camera captured Pineda talking to the pitching coach and the trainer, maybe applying the stuff. What's your take on this?
Well, I can report that camera is now an ESPN NFL analyst. It's been promoted because it's really done a good job. I am always sort of defending or on the side of as much access as you can push in terms of, you know, sort of journalistically, because I think ultimately you reward the public and give them insight into news. That said, there are these regulations that are stipulated by baseball, and there are certain places where cameras are not supposed to be, and I do respect that as a workplace issue. I would not want cameras every single place I'm going in SI. So, you know, I think ultimately this will sort of quietly go away, but, you know, it's a little tricky in that if this was the NFL would really come down, I think, on ESPN, especially sort of PR-wise, because the NFL has leverage when it comes to every one of their broadcast networks. MLB has to be a little more careful because they, while they don't need ESPN in the way that, let's say, you know, soccer needs ESPN or hockey needs the NHL, they don't have the same kind of leverage, let's say, as the National Football League. And you don't want to really anger your partner that pays you a lot of money along with Fox and Turner. So my guess is that there will be a meeting of high-level baseball people and high-level ESPN people so that this does not happen again, and it will sort of quietly go by the wayside.
I can assure you that in the two leagues that I worked with very heavily, the NBA and the NHL, they have exactly the same rules and access points and where cameras can and will be, and they expect the networks to use some discretion.
And I think that's fair, honestly. I think especially as a broadcaster, and this is, you know, having written about these guys for so long, the broadcast networks really get a lot of access that those of us in print never get.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, even to the point of ridiculousness where I remember, like, and I'm glad reporters called them out on this, you know, Chris Berman would go into Joe Torre's office before a game, put his, like, legs up on the desk as if he was, Don Zimmer, you know, because he had this kind of access. So, you know,
sure Don Zimmer could get his legs up.
Pay a lot of money, but they get a lot of access.
Yeah.
So I am with you on the thought that you do have to be respectful of that.
Richard, we got to get out of here. There's Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. That's John Shannon. He'll be departing for the moment. Butch Carter and more coming up on Primetime.